The party guests had begun to arrive. Very soon they were punching each other good-naturedly, all of them. There didn't seem to be any reason for this, no real aggression or gangs or hostility. That was the way boys behaved. Annie's friends were much gentler, she said to her mother, as they separated one pair of warring boys before they crashed into Cullum's vegetable garden, locked into their fight. Where is Annie, by the way?
In her room, I think. Well, there's no point in dragging her down to join them. She's too old for them, and not old enough to find them funny. She'll come when she hears there's birthday cake.
Or sausages. 2-1, she gets the smell of sausages and she's down like a greyhound out of a trap, said Nora sagely.
Annie was not in her room, as it happened. She'd gone out the back gate and was walking up the lane that ran parallel to Tara Road. She'd seen a small, thin ginger kitten there the other day. It mightn't belong to anyone. It had looked frightened, not as if it was used to being petted. Perhaps it was abandoned and she might keep it. They'd say no, of course, as people said no to everything. If she could get it into her room for a few days without anyone noticing, give it a litter tray and some food, then they wouldn't have the heart to turn it out. Today'd be a good day to smuggle it in. Nobody would notice. There was so much fuss about Brian and all his brain-dead friends, shouting and pushing and shoving round the garden. You could bring a giraffe upstairs today and no one would notice. Annie tried to remember which was the back gate where she'd seen the little kitten. It wasn't as far up the road as Rosemary's. It was hard to identify them from the back. Annie Lynch stood in the lane in her blue check summer dress, squinting into the afternoon sun, pushing her straight blonde hair out of her eyes. Perhaps she could peep through the keyholes of these wooden doors. Some of them were quite rickety, and it was easy to see through the cracks anyway. One of the back gates was a smart-painted wooden door you couldn't see through at all. Annie stood back a little. This must be number 32, where Rosemary Ryan lived. She had a very posh garden upstairs on the roof, but there was a garden with an ornamental pool and a summer house at the back. This might well be where the poor kitten had wandered in to have a look at the fish in the pond. Annie knelt down and looked in the keyhole. No sign of a cat. But there were people there in the summer house. They seemed to be fighting over something. She looked more carefully. It was Rosemary Ryan struggling with a man. Annie's heart leapt into her throat. Was she being attacked? Should Annie rattle at the gate and shout? Or would the attacker come out and hurt her as well? Rosemary Ryan had her skirt right up around her waist, and the man was pushing at her. With an even greater shock than the first one, Annie realized what they were doing. But this wasn't the way it was done. Not what she and Kitty Sullivan had giggled about in school. Not what people almost did at the cinema and on television. That was different. They kissed each other and lay down. It was all gentle. It wasn't like this. All this shoving and grunting. Rosemary Ryan couldn't be making love with someone. This isn't the way it was meant to be. The whole thing wasn't possible. Annie pulled back from the keyhole, her heart racing. She tried to make sense of the situation. To be honest, nobody could see them unless they were actually looking through the keyhole of the back gate. The summer house faced away from the main house and towards the back wall. Annie couldn't see who the man was. He had his back to her. All she'd seen was Rosemary's face, all screwed up and angry, upset. Not dreamy like it was in the movies. Maybe she had got it totally wrong. This mightn't be what they were doing at all. Annie looked once more. Rosemary's arms were around the man's neck. Her eyes were closed. She wasn't pushing him away. She was pulling him towards her.
That's it. Yes, yes, that's it. She was crying out.
Annie straightened up in horror. She couldn't believe what she'd seen. She started to run down the lane. When passing number 16, she could hear the noise coming from Brian's party, but she didn't stop. She didn't want to go in knowing what she now knew. She couldn't bear them all expecting her to be normal. Things would never be the same again, and she could never tell anybody. On she ran, tears blinding her eyes, until just as she was getting to the main road and back to normality, she fell. One of those unexpected falls where the earth just jumped up to meet you with a thud. It winded her totally, and she had trouble in getting her breath. When she struggled to stand, she saw she'd grazed both knees, which were bleeding, as well as her arm. She leaned against the wall of the end house and sobbed as if her heart would break. Colum heard the noise and came out.
Annie, what happened?
No reply, just heaving shoulders.
Annie, I'll run and get your mother.
No! Please don't! Please, Colum!
Colum wasn't like other grown-ups. He didn't always automatically know what was best for you.
Okay. But look at you, you've had a horrible fall. Let me see.
He held her arm gently.
No, it's only the skin. And what about your knees? Don't you look at them, I'll examine them without touching. I'll report to you.
Annie stood there while he knelt down and studied them. Eventually he said,
Lots of blood, but I don't think you need a stitch. Let me walk you home, Annie.
She shook her head.
No. Brian's having a party. I don't want to go home.
Colum took this on board.
If you like, you could come into my house, into the bathroom, and wash your poor knees. I'll be in the restaurant out of your way, but there if you need me, and you could come in and out, and I'll give you a nice lemonade or whatever you like.
He smiled at her. It worked.
Yes. I'd like that, Colum.
Together they went in, and he showed her the bathroom.
There's a whole lot of face cloths there, and if you put a little Dettol in the water...
She seemed helpless, unsure of how to start.
If you like, I could dab them for you. Take any grit out?
I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes it's easier if you do it yourself. Would I stay here on this chair while you do it and tell you if I see more bits that need to be done?
He got the first smile.
That'd be great.
He watched while the child touched her knee tentatively with the diluted disinfectant and wiped away all the grit and earth. It was only a surface scratch. The bleeding was slight.
Can't reach my elbow. Will you do that, Colum?
Gently he cleaned her arm and handed her a big fluffy towel.
Now, pat it dry.
There might be spots of blood on the towel. She looked anxious.
All the more work for Gertie's laundrette, then,
he smiled. They went into the cool, dark bar of his restaurant. At the bar there were four high stools. He gestured her to one of them.
Now, Miss Lynch, what's your pleasure?
He said.
What do you think is nice, Colum?
Well, they say that in times of shock, something with a lot of sugar is good. In fact, they always recommend hot, sweet tea.
Yeah, said Annie.
I know, that's my view too. I'll tell you what I always have. A St. Clement's. It's a mixture of orange and lemon. How does that sound?
Great, I'd like that, said Annie. Do you not drink real drinks then?
No, you see, they don't agree with me. Something to do with my personality or metabolism or whatever. It's not clear exactly what causes it, but they don't suit me.
How did you find out they didn't suit you?
I got a few little hints, like once I started I couldn't stop.
He smiled wryly.
Like drugs? Annie asked.
Just like drugs, so I had to stop altogether.
Do you miss not being able to drink real drinks at parties and things? Annie was interested.
Do I miss it? No, I don't miss the way I was, which was out of control. I'm very glad not to be like that. But I suppose I wish I was the way other people are. You know, having a nice glass of wine or two of an evening, a couple of beers on a summer day. But I'm not able to stop after that, so I can't start.
Annie looked sympathetic.
However, there are lots of things I can do that others can't, Colum said cheerfully. I can make wonderful sauces and great desserts that'd take the sight out of your eyes.
Brian's awful friends want ice cream in silver paper wrappers. Imagine, Annie said disparagingly.
I know. Isn't it disgusting,
Colum said, and they both began to laugh. Annie's laugh had a slightly hysterical tinge in it.
Nothing happened out in the lane to make you fall, did it?
Colum asked. The child's expression was guarded.
No, why?
No reason. Listen, will I walk home with you now?
I'm all right, really, Colum.
Course you are, don't we know that? But I have to go for a walk every day. All chefs must. It's a kind of rule. It stops them getting big stomachs that keep falling into their saucepans.
Annie laughed. It wasn't possible to think of Colin Barry having a tummy like that. He was nearly as slim as Dad. They set off together. Just as they came to the gate, they saw Rosemary Ryan unloading the ice creams in a cool bag from the back of her car. Annie stiffened. Cullum noticed, but said nothing.
Heavens, Annie, what a terrible cut. Did you fall?
Yes.
Well, she's okay now, Cullum said.
It looks dreadful. Where did it happen?
On the road in front of Cullum's restaurant, Annie said quickly.
Cullum was surprised.
And Cullum came to your rescue. Rosemary always smiled at Cullum flirtatiously, though it never did her any good.
Exactly. I can't have people falling down in front of my premises. Bad for business, he joked.
You were lucky you didn't fall in front of the traffic. Rosemary had lost interest in it. Now she was hauling out the boxes of ice creams. They could hear the shouting and screaming of Brian's friends from the back garden.
My public is waiting for me in the ice cream, Rosemary laughed.
I think we know which they're waiting for more. She moved ahead of them through the basement and out to the back.
Thanks, Colin.
Don't mention it.
It's just that... Well, it's nobody's business, really, where I fell, is it?
Absolutely not.
She felt he was owed some kind of explanation.
I was looking for a cat, you see. I thought if I got a kitten and sort of kept it secretly for a bit, you know.
I know.
Colin was grave.
So thanks for all the St. Clements and everything.
I'll see you around, Annie.
Gran was terrific. She'd kept sausages for Annie.
I couldn't find you, so I put them in the oven to keep warm.
You're great. Where are they all?
They're about to have the cake. Lady Ryan arranged sparklers.
Mam hates it when you call her that.
Annie giggled, and then she winced at the pain in her elbow. Her grandmother was full of concern.
Let me wash that for you.
It's okay, Gran. It's done. Dettol and all. Look at Auntie Hilary with all those awful boys.
She loves them. She's brought a big dartboard where you throw rings on. There's fierce competition.
What's the prize?
Oh, some game. Hilary knows what electronic games children of that age want from being up to school, you know.
Why didn't Auntie Hilary have any children, Gran?
The Lord didn't send her any, that's all.
The Lord doesn't send children, Gran, you know that.
No, not directly, but indirectly he does. And in your Auntie Hilary's case, he just didn't.
Maybe she didn't like mating, Annie said thoughtfully.
What?
Nora Johnson was at a loss for words, which was very unlike her.
Maybe she decided not to go through the whole business of getting them like cats and rabbits, you know. There must be some people who just don't like the thought of it.
Not many, her grandmother said dryly.
I bet that's it. You could ask her.
It's not the thing you ask people, Annie, believe me.
I do, Gran. I know you couldn't ask her. There's some things you don't talk about at all. You just put them away to the back of your mind. Isn't that right?
Absolutely right, her grandmother said with enormous relief.
Later on, the parents of Brian's friends came to collect their sons, and they stood in the warm summer evening in the back garden of Tara Road while the boys played and pummeled on, tiring themselves and each other out for bedtime. Annie watched her father and mother standing at the centre of the group, passing around tray of wine and little smoked salmon sandwiches. Dad's arm was around Mam's shoulder a lot of the time. Annie knew from the girls at school that parents still want to be with each other and make love and all that, even when they didn't want children. It seemed such an unlikely thing to want to do, horrible even. There was much sympathy about the grazed knee, and when she went to bed, Mam came into her room. She sat in Annie's big armchair, moving the furry toy animals out of the way. You've been very quiet all afternoon and evening, Annie. Are those knees all right?
Fine, Mam. Don't fuss.
I'm not fussing. I'm just sorry for your poor old knees and your elbow too, like you'd be if I fell.
Oh, I know, Mam. Sorry, you weren't fussing. I'm fine.
And how did it happen?
I was running, I told you.
Well, it's not like you to fall. You're such a graceful girl. When Hilary and I were your age, we were falling all the time, but you never do.
I think it's because your dad calls you a princess you decided to behave like one.
Her mother's look was so fond and warm that Annie reached out for her hand.
Thanks, Mum, she said, eyes full.
Oh, I was so exhausted out there today, Annie, with those tomboys. Honestly, they're like young bullocks headbutting each other, not like children at all. And I think what an ease it's always been to have your friends. But that's the difference between the sexes for you. Would you like a hot drink? You've had a bad shock today.
What do you mean?
Annie's eyes were wary. The fall. It jars the system even at your age.
Oh, that. No, no, I'm fine.
Rhea kissed her daughter's flushed face and closed the door. She'd spoken only the truth. It had been a killing day. But then wasn't she so well off compared to everyone else? Her mother going home alone with that absurd little dog. Hilary crossing the city with her dartboard in a big carrier bag to a man who wouldn't hold her in his arms anymore because they couldn't make children. Gertie facing who knew what horrors in the flat above the laundrette. Rosemary alone in that marble palace of a penthouse. While she, Rhea, had everything she could ever have wanted. Chapter 3. Sometimes they saw mothers and daughters together in the shops, talking normally, holding up a skirt or a dress, nodding or frowning, but concerned, like friends. One going into a cubicle to try something on, the other holding four more outfits outside. Well, perhaps they weren't real people, Rhea told herself. Maybe they were actresses or from advertising. Judging from the 11 confrontations she'd had with her own daughter in an hour and a half, it was very hard to believe that any teenager and her mother would go shopping together from choice. These other people were only playing at being happy families, surely. Annie had this gift token from her grandmother. It was for more money than she'd ever spent before on clothes. Up to now, Annie had only bought shoes, jeans and T-shirts on her own. But this was different. It was for something to wear for all the parties this summer. It had seemed normal for Rhea to go with her and help her choose. It had even seemed like fun. That was some hours ago. Now it seemed like the most foolish thing either of them had ever done in their lives. When Annie had looked at something with leather and chains, Rhea had gasped aloud.
I knew you were going to be like that. I knew it in my bones, Annie cried.
No, I mean, it's just, I thought... Rhea was wordless.
What did you think? Go on, Mum. Say what you thought. Just don't stand there gulping.
Annie's face was red and angry. Rhea wasn't going to say that she thought the outfit was like an illustration in a magazine article called Sadomasochistic Wardrobe Unearthed. Why don't you try it on? She said weakly.
If you think I'm going to put it on now that I've seen your face and let you make fun of me.
Annie, I'm not making fun of you. We don't know what it looks like until you put it on. Maybe it's...
Oh, Mum, for God's sake.
But I mean it, and it's your token.
I know it is. Gran gave it to me to buy something I liked, not some awful revolting thing with a butch tartan waistcoat like you want me to wear.
Oh, no, no. Be reasonable, Annie. I haven't steered you towards anything at all, have I?
Well, what are you here for then, Mum? Answer me that. If you've nothing to suggest, what are you doing? What are we doing here?
Well, I thought we were looking.
But you never look. You never look at anything or anyone. Otherwise you wouldn't wear the kind of clothes you do.
Look, I know you don't want the same clothes as I do.
Nobody wants the same clothes as you do, Mum. Honestly, I mean, have you thought about it for 1 minute?
Rhea looked in one of the many mirrors around. She saw reflected a flushed, angry teenager, slim with straight blonde hair, holding what appeared to be a bondage garment. Beside her was a tired-looking woman with a great head of frizzy hair tumbling onto her shoulders, and a black V-neck sweater worn over a flowing black and white skirt. She'd put on comfortable flat shoes for shopping. This wasn't a day when Rhea had rushed thoughtlessly out of the house. She'd remembered the mirrors that come up on you suddenly in dress shops. She'd combed her hair, put on makeup, and even rubbed shoe cream into her shoes and handbag. It had all looked fine in the hall mirror before they'd left Tara Road. It didn't look great here. I mean, it's not even as if you were really old, Rhea's daughter Annie said. Lots of people your age haven't given up.
With great difficulty, Rhea forced herself not to take her daughter by the hair and drag her from the shop. Instead, she looked thoughtfully back into the mirror. She was 37. How old did she look? 35? That's all. Her curly hair made her young. She didn't look 40 or anything. Oh, but then what did she know?
Oh, Mam, stop sucking in your cheeks and making silly faces. You look ridiculous.
When had it happened? Whatever it was that made Annie hate her, scorn her, they used to get on so well. Rhea made one more superhuman effort.
Listen, we mustn't talk about me. It's your treat. Your gran wants you to get something nice and suitable.
No, she doesn't, Mam. Do you never listen? She said I was to get whatever I wanted. She never said one word about it being suitable.
I meant...
You mean anything that would look well on a poodle at a dog show?
Annie turned away with tears in her eyes. Nearby, a woman and her daughter were looking through a rail of shirts.
They must have a pink one, the girl was saying excitedly. Come on, we'll ask the assistant. You look terrific in pink. Then we'll go and have a coffee.
They seemed an ordinary mother and daughter, not just a couple sent over by central casting to depress real people. Rhea turned away so that nobody could see the tears of envy in her eyes. Danny had organized the people to deliver the sanding machine at 11 o'clock. Rhea wanted to be home to greet them. It was such a peculiar idea to take up their carpets and bring out the beauty of the wooden floors. They didn't look a bit beautiful to her, full of nails and discoloration. But Danny knew about these things. She accepted this. His work and his skill was selling houses to people who knew everything. And these people knew that exposed wooden floors and carefully chosen rugs were good, while wall-to-wall carpeting was bad, and obviously concealed unmerciful horrors beneath. You could rent a sander for a weekend and walk around behind it while it juddered and peeled off the worst bit of your floor. That was what lay ahead today and tomorrow. Would Annie think she was sulking if she left her now? Would she be relieved?
Annie, you know your father arranged that this sanding machine come today? She began tentatively. Mom, I'm not spending the weekend doing that. It's not fair.
No, no, of course not. I wasn't going to suggest it. I was going to say I should go home and be there when they arrive, but I don't want to abandon you. Annie stared at her wordlessly.
Not that I'm much help, really. I'm inclined to get confused when I see a lot of clothes together, Rhea said.
Annie's face changed. Suddenly she reached out and gave her mother an unexpected hug.
You're not the worst, Mam, she said grudgingly.
From Annie this was high, high praise these days. Rhea went home with a lighter heart. Rhea had just got in the door of her house in Tara Road when she heard the gate rattle and the familiar cry,
Rhea! Rhea!
A call known all over the area, as regular as the Angelus or the sound of the ice cream van. It was her mother and the dog, the misshapen and unsettled animal Pliers, a dog never at ease in Rhea and Danny's home in Tara Road, but because of circumstances forced to spend a lot of his disturbed life there. Rhea's mother was always going somewhere where dogs weren't allowed, and Pliers pined if left at home alone. Pliers yowled in Rhea's house, but for some reason this wasn't regarded as pining and was considered preferable. Rhea's mother never came in unannounced or uninvited. She'd made a great production out of this from the time she'd moved into the little house near them. Never assume you're automatically welcome in your children's homes. That was her motto, she always said. It seemed a loveless kind of motto, and also totally inappropriate, since she did call unannounced and uninvited almost every day at Rhea and Danny's house. She thought that this shout at the gate was somehow enough warning and preparation. Today reminded Rhea of being back at school, when her mother would come to the playground or to the park where her pals had gathered, always calling,
Rhea!
Her school friends used to take up the cry, and now here she was, a middle-aged woman, and nothing had changed, her mother still calling her name as if it were some kind of a war cry.
Come in, Mum!
She tried to put a welcome in her voice. The dog would worry at the sanding machine when it arrived and bark at it,
and then he would set up one of his yowls so plaintively that they'd assume his paw had been trapped in it. Of all days to have to babysit Pliers, this must be one of the worst. Nora Johnson bustled in, sure as always of her welcome. Hadn't she called out from the gate to say she was on her way? There was a young pup on the bus asked me for my bus pass. I said to him to keep a civil tongue in his head. Rhea wondered why her mother, such a known dog lover, always used the word pup as a term of abuse. There were pups everywhere these days, in shops, driving vans, hanging about. What was so bad about him asking you that? How dare he assume that I am at the age to have a bus pass? There's no way that he should think with only half a look out of his slits of eyes that I'm a pensioner. Of course Rhea's mother, despite her lemon-coloured linen suit and black polka-dot scarf, looked exactly the age she was. The young pup on the bus had just been tactless. At his age, he assumed everyone over 40 was geriatric. But there was no point in trying to explain any of this to her mother. Rhea busied herself getting out the tray of shortbread she'd made the night before. The coffee mugs were ready. Soon the kitchen would be full of people, the men with the sanding machine, Danny wanting to learn how it worked, Brian and some of his school friends. There was always something on offer to eat in the Lynch's kitchen, unlike their own. Annie might be back with some amazing outfit, and Kitty Sullivan, whom she'd met in the shopping mall. Rosemary always came in on a Saturday, and sometimes Gertie escaped from the flat over the laundrette. Gertie came twice a week to do the cleaning. It was a professional arrangement, but she could drop in socially on a Saturday. There'd always be an excuse. She'd left something behind, or she wanted to check the times for next week. Colum Barry might come in with vegetables. Every Saturday he brought them in armfuls of whatever he'd collected. Sometimes he even scrubbed big earth-covered parsnips and carrots, or trimmed spinach for them. Rhea made soups and casseroles with the freshest produce possible, all grown with no effort a few feet away from her own kitchen. Other people came and went. Rhea Lynch's kitchen was a place with a welcome. So unlike the way things had been when Rhea was young herself, and nobody was allowed out to their kitchen, a dark, murky place with torn linoleum on the floor. Visitors weren't really encouraged to come into her mother's house at all. Her mother, and from what she could remember her father, were restless people, unable to relax themselves, and incapable of seeing that others might want to. Even when her mother visited her here in Tara Road, she hardly ever settled. She was constantly rattling keys or struggling out of or into coats, just arriving or about to leave, unable to give in to the magic of this warm, inviting place. It had been the same in Danny's family. His mother and father had sat in their very functional farmhouse kitchen, drinking mug after mug of tea and welcoming no disturbance. Their sons grew up out of doors or in their own rooms and lived their own lives. To this day, Danny's parents lived that kind of life. They didn't mix with neighbours or friends. They held no family gatherings. Rhea looked around with pride at her big, cheerful kitchen, where there was always life and company, and where she presided over everything at its heart. Danny never noticed Nora Johnson's key rattling, nor was he irritated by the way she called from the gate. He seemed delighted to see his mother-in-law when he came into the kitchen and gave her a big hug. He wore a blue sport shirt that he'd bought for himself when he was in London. It was the kind of thing that Rhea would never have chosen for him in a million years. Yet she had to admit it made him look impossibly young, like a handsome schoolboy. Perhaps she was the worst in the world at choosing clothes. She tugged uneasily at the floppy black top that Annie had mocked.
"Holly, I know why you're here. You came to help with the sanding," Danny said. "Not only do you give our daughter a small fortune for clothes, but now you're coming to help us do the floors."
"I did not, Daniel. I came to leave poor Pliers with you for an hour. They're so intolerant down at St. Rita's. They won't allow a dog inside the door. And isn't it just what those old people there need? Four-legged company? But those young pups of doctors say it's unhygienic, or that they'd trip over the animals. Typical."
"But it's our gain to have Pliers here."
"Hello, fella."
Could Danny really like the terrible hound, about to open his mouth and drown everything with his wail. Plier's teeth were stained and yellow. There were flecks of foam round his mouth. Danny looked at him with what definitely seemed like affection. But then, so much of Danny's life depended on being polite to those who wanted to buy or sell property. It was hard to know when he was being genuinely enthusiastic or faking it. His wasn't a world where you said what you thought too positively. Rhea's mother had downed her coffee and was on her way. She'd become very involved in the whole life of St. Rita's, the retirement home in number 68. Hilary was convinced that their mother was actually ready to book herself in as a resident. Nora had taught Annie to play bridge and sometimes took her granddaughter along to St. Rita's to join in the game. Annie said it was marvellous fun. The old people were as noisy as anyone at school and had just the same kind of feuds and squabbles. Annie reported that everyone in the home held Granny in high regard. Of course, compared to them, Granny was young. Nora said it was only sensible to examine the options about aging. She dropped many hints that Rhea should do the same. One day she too would be old and on her own. She'd be sorry then that she hadn't given more time to the elderly. It wasn't as if she had any real work to go out to like other people. She had plenty of time on her hands.
"You must drive the old fellows mad down in St. Rita's, a young spring chicken like yourself in lemon coming to dazzle them," Danny said. "Go on with your flattery, Danny."
But Nora Johnson loved it.
"I mean it, Holly. You'd take the sight out of their eyes," Danny teased her.
Pleased, his mother-in-law patted her hair and bustled out again, smart and trim in her suit.
"Your mother's wearing well," Danny said. "We'd be lucky to look as spry at her age."
"Oh, I'm sure we will. And aren't you like a boy, rather than a man freewheeling down to 40?
Rhea laughed. But Danny didn't laugh back. That had been the wrong thing to say. He was 37 going on 38. Foolish Rhea to have made a joke that annoyed him. She pretended not to have noticed her mistake.
"And look at me. You said that when you first met me, you took a good look at my mother before you let yourself fancy me. Women always turn into their mothers, you said."
Rhea was babbling a lot, but she wanted to take that strained look off his face.
"Did I say that?"
He sounded surprised.
"Yes, you did. You must remember."
"No."
Rhea wished she hadn't begun this. He seemed confused and not at all flattered by her total recall.
"I must ring Rosemary," she said suddenly.
"Why?"
The real reason was so she didn't have to stand here alone with him in the kitchen with a feeling of dread that she was boring him, irritating him.
"See, is she coming around?" Rhea said brightly.
"She's always coming around," said Danny, "like half the world."
He seemed to say that in mock impatience, but Rhea knew he loved it all, the busy, warm, laughing life of their kitchen in Tara Road, so different to the loveless house where he'd grown up in the country, with the crows cawing to each other in the trees outside. Danny was as happy here as she was. It was the life of their dreams. It was a pity they were so tired and rushed that they hadn't been making love as often as they used to. But this was just because there was so much happening at the moment. Things would be back to normal soon enough. Rosemary wanted to know all about the shopping expedition when she arrived.
"It's wonderful seeing them coming into their own," she said, "knowing what they want and defining their style."
She didn't sit down. She prowled around the kitchen, picking up bits of pottery and looking at the name underneath. Fingering the strings of onions on the wall, reading the recipe taped to the fridge, examining everything and vaguely admiring it all. She clutched her mug of black coffee with such gratitude you'd think that nobody had ever handed her one before in her life. Naturally, she waved away the shortbread. She'd just stood up from a disgustingly huge breakfast, she said, even though her slim hips and girlish figure showed anyone that this was unlikely to have been the truth. Rosemary wore smart, well-cut jeans and a white silk shirt, what she called weekend clothes. Her hair was freshly done. The salon's first client every Saturday morning, week in, week out. Rosemary always sighed enviously over those people who could go any day of the week. Lucky people like Rhea, who didn't go out to work. Rosemary now owned the printing company. She'd won a small business award. If she weren't her longest-standing best friend, Rhea could have choked her. She seemed to be the actual proof that a woman could do everything and look terrific as well. But then she and Rosemary went back a long way. She'd been there the very day Rhea had met Danny, for heaven's sake. She'd listened to all the dramas over the years, as Rhea had listened to hers. They had very few secrets. In fact, Gertie was the only subject where they really differed. "You're only encouraging her to think her lifestyle is normal by giving her tenors for that drunk. She's not going to leave him. You could put all kinds of work her way. I wish you would," Rhea pleaded. "No, Rhea. Can't you see you're making the situation worse? If Gertie thinks you go along with this business of her head being like a punch bag and her terrified children living up in her mother's house, then you're just making sure the whole scene goes on and on. Suppose you said one day, enough is enough, it'd bring her to her senses, give her courage. No, it wouldn't. It would only make her feel she hadn't one friend left on earth." Rosemary would sigh. They agreed on so much. The sheer impossibility of mothers, the problems with sisters, the wisdom of living in the lovely tree-lined Tara Road. And Rosemary had always been incredibly supportive to Rhea about everything. Too many other women told Rhea straight out they'd go mad if they didn't have a job to go to and money that they earned themselves. Rosemary never did that. Any more than she'd ask Rhea, "What do you do all day?" especially in front of Danny. For the last 5 years, of course, Annie and Brian didn't need as much minding. But somehow the thought of a job outside the home hadn't really been a serious one. And anyway, realistically, what job could Rhea have done? There was no real training or qualification to fall back on. Better far to keep the show on the road here. Rhea rarely felt defensive about being a stay-at-home wife, and she genuinely felt it must be a good life if Rosemary, who had everything that it was possible to have, said she envied her. "Well, go on, Rhea. Tell me, what did she buy?" Rosemary really thought it had been fun, and that Annie and she had agreed and bought something. "Ah, I'm no good at knowing what to look for, where to point her," Rhea said, biting her lip. She thought she saw a small flash of impatience in Rosemary's face. "Of course you are. Haven't you all the time in the world to look around shops?" Then the van containing the sanding machine arrived, and the men who delivered it were offered coffee, and 10-year-old Brian, looking as if he had been sent out as a child labourer digging on a builder's site instead of having just got out of bed, came in with his two even scruffier friends, scooping up cans of Coke and shortbread to take upstairs. And Gertie, with her big anxious eyes and some rambling explanation about how she hadn't cleaned the copper saucepan yesterday, began to scrub at its base, which meant that she needed a loan of at least £5. Pliers whined, and there, on cue, was Rhea's mother back unexpectedly from St. Rita's. They hadn't told her that there was a funeral there that morning, so she wasn't needed after all. And Cullen Barry knocked on the window to show Rhea that he was leaving her a large basket of vegetables. She waved him in to join the group and felt the customary surge of pride at being the centre of such a happy home. She saw Danny standing at the kitchen door, watching everything. He was so boyish and handsome. Why had she made that silly remark about him approaching 40? Still, he'd got over it. It had passed. His face didn't look troubled now. He just stood there watching, almost as if he were an objective observer, as if he were an outsider, someone viewing it all for the first time. They all took turns at doing the floors, and it wasn't as easy as it looked. Not just a matter of standing behind a machine that knew its own mind. You had to steer it and point it and negotiate corners and heavy objects. Danny supervised it, full of enthusiasm. "This was going to change the house," he said. Rhea felt an unexpected shiver in her back. The house was wonderful. Why did he want to change it? Rhea's mother wouldn't stay for lunch. "I don't care how many tons of vegetables you say the Cullum left out for you. I know what troubles result from people moving in on top of other people. Sit down with your own family, Rhea, and look after that husband of yours. It's a miracle you've held on to him so long. I've always said that you were born lucky to catch a man like Danny Lynch when all was said and done. Now, Holly, stop giving me a swollen head. I'm a very mixed blessing, let me tell you. Here, if you really won't stay, let me get you some of Cullum's tomatoes to take with you. I can just see you
serving delicate thin tomato sandwiches and vodka martinis to gentlemen callers all afternoon.
Nora Johnson pealed with laughter.
Chance would be a fine thing. But I will take some of those tomatoes to get them out of your way.
Rhea's mother could never take anything that was offered to her graciously. She would only accept something if there was an air of doing you a favour about it. Rosemary was disappointed that there were no clothes to examine. She wondered had they caught sight of the gorgeous scarlet outfit in the corner window just where the two streets joined. No? Oh, absolutely heavenly. No good for people of our age, Rosemary said, patting her own flat stomach, but great for someone like Annie, who had a figure like an angel and wasn't getting droppy and droopy like the rest of us. Rosemary must have known that she wasn't getting droppy and droopy. She must have.
Brian and his friends, Deco and Miles, had a problem. They'd been going to watch a match on cable television up in Deco's house, but there was a new baby, and so the television couldn't be put on.
"Can't you watch it here?" Rhea had asked.
Brian looked at her, embarrassed.
"No, do you not understand anything? We can't watch it here."
"But of course you can. It's your home as much as Dad's and mine. You can take a tray into the sitting room." Brian's face was purple, trying to explain.
"We don't have it here, Ma. We don't have cable like Deco's family."
Rhea remembered. There'd been a long argument some months ago. She and Danny had said the children already watched too much television.
"Not that it's any good having it now," Deco said glumly. "Not if we can't turn it on because of the awful baby."
"Come on, Deco, a little brother can't be awful," Rhea said.
"It is, Mrs. Lynch. It's disgusting and embarrassing. What on earth do they have to have one for after all these years? I'm 10, for heaven's sake."
The boys shook their heads and began to debate the possibilities of getting an extension lead to add to the flex. If they moved it 12 feet outside the house and kept the sound down, would that do? Deco was doubtful. His mother had gone ballistic about this desperate baby. This wasn't good news for Rhea. She'd been thinking long and hard about their having another child. The estate agency was now going from strength to strength. Danny had been made auctioneer of the year. They were still young. They had a big house. Another baby was just what she'd been hoping they might consider.
The copper saucepan was gleaming. Gertie showed it proudly to Rhea.
"You could look at your face in it, Rhea, and it'd be better than a mirror."
Rhea wondered why anyone would want to lift a huge saucepan to look at a reflection, but didn't say so. Neither did she say anything about the bruise down the side of Gertie's face, a dark mark that she was trying to hide with her hair.
"Oh, my goodness, it's shining like gold. You're so good to come in on a Saturday, Gertie."
The routine was that Rhea would now offer the money and Gertie would refuse, but then take it. It was a matter of dignity, and that was the way they played it now, but not today.
"You know why I did."
"Well, I mean, it's still very good of you." Rhea reached for her handbag, surprised by the directness.
"Rhea, we both know I'm desperate. Can I have £10, please? I'll work it all off next week."
"Don't give it to him, Gertie."
Gertie held back her hair until Rhea could see the long red scab of a cut.
"Please, Rhea."
"He'll only do it again. Leave him. It's the only thing."
"And go where? Tell me that."
"Where could I go with two kids?"
"Change the locks. Get a barring order."
"Rhea, I'm on my knees to you. He's waiting on the road."
Rhea gave her the £10. From the hall, Rhea could hear Annie speaking to her friend Kitty.
"No, of course we didn't get anything. What do you think? Oh, just standing there gasping, eyes rolling up to heaven. You're not going to wear this. You're not going to wear that." "No, I'm not actually saying it, but written all over her face." "Oh, gross, I tell you." "No, I'm not going to get anything at all. I swear, it's the easiest. It's not worth the hassle. I don't know what I'll tell Gran, though. She's so generous, and she doesn't mind what I wear."
Rhea looked for Danny. Just to be with him for a moment would make her feel better. It might mean a return of some of the strength and confidence that seemed to be seeping out of her. He was bent slightly over the sanding machine.
his body juddering with it as it ground through to the good wood he wanted to expose. He was totally involved in it, and yet there was something about him that seemed as if he were doing it for somebody else, as if he'd been asked by one of his clients to improve a property. Rhea found her hand going to her throat and wondered, was she getting flu? This was a marvellous Saturday morning in Tara Road. Why was everything upsetting her? Rhea wondered what would happen if she were to write to a problem page or talk to a counsellor. Would the advice be that she should go out and get a job? Yes, that would, on the face of it, be a very reasonable response. Outside people would think that a job took your mind off things, less time to brood, might make you feel a bit more independent, important. It would seem like nitpicking to explain that it wasn't the answer. Rhea had a job. There was no sense in going out somewhere every morning just for the sake of it, to make some point. And Danny had often said that a working wife would play hell with this tax situation. And the children needed a home presence more than ever at this stage. And her mother needed her to be there when she came in every day. And Gertie did, not just for the few pounds she earned from cleaning, but for the solidarity. And who would do the charity work if Rhea were to have a full-time job? It had nothing to do with smart fundraising lunches like some middle-class women spent their time organizing. This was real work, serving in a shop, selling things to make money, turning up at the hospital to mind the toddlers whose mothers were being told they had breast cancer. It was collecting old clothes, storing them in the garage, then getting them dry cleaned at a cheap bulk rate. It was finding containers and making chutneys and sauces. It was standing outside the supermarket for hours with a flag tin. And the house itself needed her. Danny had said so often that she was a one-person line of defence, rooting out woodworm, fighting damp and dry rot. And suppose, just suppose, that getting a job was the answer. What job would she do? The very mention of the internet sent a chill through Rhea. She'd have to learn basic keyboard skills and how to work office machinery before she could even ask for a job as some kind of receptionist. Perhaps the empty, anxious feeling would go. Maybe the solution had nothing to do with looking for a job. The answer could be as old as time. Simply that she was broody. She wanted another baby, a little head cradled at her breast, two trusting eyes looking up at her, Danny at her side. It wasn't a ridiculous notion, it was exactly what they needed. Despite the scorn and ridicule from Brian and his friends, it was time to have another baby. They were having dinner with Rosemary. Tonight it wasn't a party, there were just the three of them. Rhea knew what would be served. A chilled soup, grilled fish and salad, fruit and cheese afterwards, served by the big picture window that looked out on the large, well-lit roof garden. Rosemary's apartment, number 32 Tara Road, was worth a small fortune now, Danny always said, and, of course, immaculately kept. With the success of Rosemary's company, there was no shortage of money, and even though she wasn't a serious cook like Rhea, Rosemary could always put an elegant meal on the table without any apparent effort. Rhea would know, of course, how much had come directly from the delicatessen, but nobody else would. When people praised the delicious brown bread, Rosemary would just smile, and it was always arranged so well. Grapes and figs tumbling around on some cool modernistic tray. A huge, tall, blue glass jug of iced water. White tulips in a black vase. Stylish beyond anyone's dreams. Modern jazz at a low volume on the player. And Rosemary dressed as if she were going out to a premiere. Rhea was constantly amazed at her energy and her high standards. She walked with Danny along Tara Road. Sometimes she wished he didn't speculate so much about what the retail value of each house was, but then that was his business. It was only natural. As they'd said to each other so often, this road stood out alone in Dublin. Any other street was either upmarket or downmarket. This was the exception. There were houses in Tara Road which changed hands for fortunes. There were dilapidated terraces, each house having several bedsitters where the dustbins and the bicycles spelled out shabby rented property. There were red brick middle-class houses where civil servants and bank officials had lived for generations. There were more and more houses like their own, places that had been splendid once, and were gradually coming back to the elegance they had previously known.
There was a row of shops down by the laundrette on the corner where Gertie lived, the shops getting gradually smarter as the years went by. There was Colin Barry's smart restaurant in its own grounds. There were little places like her mother's, which defied description and definition. Every time Rhea came in the gate of number 32, she marvelled at how elegant the whole front looked. Her thoughts went in well-travelled channels. She'd love their house to have a big, expansive, welcoming area like this. A place where more than one car could park, where everything seemed to sweep up towards the door, flowers getting taller and turning into bushes as they approached the granite steps, as if the house was some kind of temple. In their own house, there was no air of permanency. It was as if the whole place could be dismantled in minutes. True, a few years back, Danny had agreed to some small rockeries and a basic tarmacadam on the surface, but compared to number 32, theirs was absolutely nothing. Nobody would imagine that anyone in number 32 would ever build flats or anything in their drive, but that could easily happen in the Lynch establishment the way it looked now. Danny had said several times that this just added to the charm, mystery and value of their property. Rhea had said the money value of your property was only important when you came to sell it. Otherwise, the value was surely only what made you feel good while you lived there. They talked about this from time to time, but it was one of the rare subjects where Rhea had never been able to communicate how strongly she felt about it all. The business of wanting to make a more definite, permanent entrance to the house always sounded superficial. It came out as nagging or envying what someone else had just for the sake of it. Rhea liked to think she was able to tell what was really important and what wasn't. She'd use all her powers of persuasion in suggesting that Danny should be a father again. A garden was much lower on the list of priorities, and she didn't want to hassle him about everything. He'd been looking tired and pale lately. He worked too hard. Rhea looked around her as Rosemary went out to get them their drinks. This was a truly perfect setting for her friend. No sign whatsoever that the owner was a shrewd businesswoman. Rosemary kept all her files and work at the office. Tara Road was for relaxing in, and it looked as pristine as the day she'd moved in. The paintwork wasn't scuffed, the furniture hadn't known the wear and tear of the young. Rhea noticed there were art books and magazines arranged on a low table. They wouldn't remain there long in her house. They'd be covered with someone's homework or jacket or tennis shoes or the evening newspaper. Always Rhea felt that Rosemary's house didn't really feel like a home. More like something you'd photograph for a magazine. She was about to say that to Danny as they walked home along Tara Road, peering in at the other houses as they passed, and as always congratulating themselves on having been so clever as to buy in this area when they were young and desperate. But Danny spoke first.
"I love going to that house," he said unexpectedly. "It's so calm and peaceful. There are no demands made on you."
Rhea looked at him walking with his jacket half over his shoulder in the warm spring evening, his hair falling into his eyes as always. No barber had ever been able to deal with it. Why did he like the feel of Rosemary's apartment? It wasn't Danny's taste at all, much too spare. It was probably just because it was valuable. You couldn't spend all your working day dealing with property prices and not get affected by those kind of values and standards. Deep down, Danny wanted a house with warm colours and full of people. If they had been having Rosemary to dinner tonight, it would have been 7 or 8 people round the kitchen table. The children would have come in and out with their friends. Gertie might have come in to help serve and eventually join them at the table. There'd be music in the background, the telephone ringing. Possibly Clement, the inquisitive cat, would come in and examine the guest list. People would shout and interrupt each other. There would be large bottles of wine already open at each end of the table. A big fish chowder filled with mussels to start, and large prawns and thick, chunky bread. A roast as a main course, and at least 2 desserts. Rhea always made wonderful treacle tart that no one could resist. That was the kind of evening they all enjoyed, not something that could have been part of a tasteful French movie. But it was a silly thing to argue about, and it might seem as if she were trying to praise herself. So Rhea, as she did so often, took the point of view she thought would please him. She tucked her arm into Danny's and said he was right. It had been nice to be able to sit and talk in such a relaxed way. nothing about thinking that Rosemary had dressed up and made up as if she were going to a television interview rather than to welcome Danny and Rhea, probably the people closest to her.
"Oh, we're lucky to have such good friends and neighbours," she said with a sigh of pleasure.
That much she meant. As they turned into their own garden, they saw that the light was on in the sitting room.
"They're still up," Danny sounded pleased.
"I hope they're nothing of the sort. It's nearly 1 o'clock.
"Well, if it's not the children, we have burglars," Danny said, sounding not at all worried.
Burglars would hardly be watching television and waiting for the occupants to return. Rhea was annoyed. She'd hoped that tonight she and Danny could have a drink together in the kitchen and they might talk about the possibility of another baby. She had her arguments ready in case there was resistance. They'd been close tonight, physically anyway, even if she'd never understand his pleasure in that cool, remote home of Rosemary's. Why did the children have to be up tonight of all nights? It was Annie, of course, and her friend, Kitty. There had been no mention of Kitty coming around, no request that they could take Rhea's bottles of nail varnish to paint each other's toenails, or borrow her fitness video, which was blaring from the machine. They looked up as if mildly annoyed to see the adults returning to their own home. "Hi, Mr. Lynch," said Kitty, who rarely acknowledged other women, but smiled broadly at any man she saw. Kitty looked like something in a documentary television program about the dangers of life in a big city. She was waif-thin and had dark circles under her eyes. These were a result of late nights at the disco. Rhea knew just how many, because Annie had railed at the unfairness of not being able to get similar freedom. Danny thought she was a funny little thing, a real character.
"Hi, Kitty. Hi, Annie. Why, look, you've painted each toenail a different colour. How marvellous."
The girl smiled at him, pleased.
"Of course, there isn't a great range," Annie said apologetically. "No blues and black or anything, just pinks and reds."
Kitty's frown of disapproval was terrible to see.
"Oh, I am sorry," Rhea said sarcastically.
But somehow it came out all sharp and bitter.
She'd meant it to be exasperated and funny, but it sounded wrong. The unfairness of this annoyed her. It was her makeup drawer they'd ransacked without permission, and she was meant to be flattered, but also to feel inadequate at not having a technicolor choice for them.
The girl shrugged and looked at Danny for some kind of backup. "Brian in bed?" she asked crisply, before Danny said anything that would make it all worse.
"No, he's taking the car and he and Miles and Deco have gone out to a few clubs," Annie said.
"Annie, really?"
"Oh, ma'am, what do you expect? You don't think Kitty or I know where Brian is or care, do you?"
Kitty decided to rescue it.
"Now, please don't worry about a thing, Mrs. Lynch. He went to bed at 9 o'clock. He's all tucked up and asleep. Really, he is."
She managed to cast Rhea in the role of fussing geriatric mother who wasn't all there in the head.
"Of course that's where he is, Rhea." Danny had joined in patting her down.
"Was it a nice night?" Annie asked her father, not because she wanted to know, but because she wanted to punish her mother.
"Lovely. No fussing. No rushing around."
Even in her present mood of doing anything to annoy her mother, Annie couldn't appear to see much to enthuse about there. Rhea decided not to notice the angry resentment that Annie felt about everything these days. Like so many things, she let it pass. "Well, I suppose you'd both want to go to bed now. Is Kitty staying the night?"
"It's Saturday, ma'am. You do realize there's no school tomorrow. We still have some sit-ups to do."
Kitty's voice was whining, wheedling, as if she feared that Mrs. Lynch might strike her a blow.
"You girls don't need sit-ups."
Danny's smile was flattering, but yet couldn't be accepted. He was, after all, a doting and elderly father.
"Oh, Dad, but we do."
"Come here. Let's see. What does she tell us to do?"
Rhea stood with a small hard smile and watched her husband doing a ridiculous exercise to flatten his already flat stomach with two teenagers. They all laughed at each other's attempts as they fell over. She wouldn't join them, nor would she leave them. It was probably only 10 minutes, yet it felt like 2 hours. And then there was no warm chat in the kitchen, and no chance of loving when they went upstairs. Danny said he needed a shower. He was so unfit,
so out of training these days. A few minutes' mild exercise nearly knocked him out.
I'm turning into a real middle-aged tub of lard, he said.
No, you're not. You're beautiful, she said to him truthfully, as he took off his clothes, and she yearned for him to come straight to bed. But instead he went to shower and came back in pajamas. There would be no loving tonight. Just before she went to sleep, Rhea remembered how long it had been since there'd been any loving. But she wasn't going to start worrying about that now on top of everything else. It was just that they were busy. Everyone said that's what happened to people for a while, and then it sorted itself out.
On Sunday, Danny was gone all day. There were clients looking at the new apartments. They were aiming for a young professional kind of market, Danny had said. The developers had asked, why bother having a health club and coffee bar attached, unless the young singles could meet similarly minded people there. He had to go and supervise the whole sales approach. No, he wouldn't be back for lunch. Brian was going to Deco's house. There was a christening. Deco wasn't going to go at all, but there'd be his grandmother and people from his mum's and dad's work there, and apparently it was essential he be there, for some reason. Anyway, it had been agreed that if Miles and Brian and he wore clean shirts and passed around the sandwiches, they'd get £5 each.
It's a lot of money, Deco said solemnly. They must be mad investing £15 in us all being there.
I would have thought normal people would have paid us £15 for us all not to be there, Brian said. Nobody's normal in a house where there's a baby, Deco had said sagely, and they all sighed.
Annie said that she and Kitty were going to the career forum at school, and that of course they had told everyone this ages ago over and over. It was just that nobody ever listened. You didn't go to any of the other career forums, her mother protested.
But those were only about the bank and insurance and law and awful things.
Annie was amazed that it wasn't clear. And what is it this week that you have to go?
Well, it's real careers, like the music industry and modelling and things.
What about your lunch, Annie? I defrosted a whole leg of lamb and now it seems there'll be no one there.
Only you, ma'am, would think that an old leg of lamb was important compared to someone's whole future.
She banged out of the room in a temper. Rhea rang her mother.
No, don't be ridiculous, Rhea. Why would I drop everything and come to eat huge quantities of red meat with you?
Why did you defrost it anyway until you knew whether your family were going to be there to eat it? That's you all over. You never think about anything. Rhea rang Gertie. Jack answered.
What?
Oh, Jack, it's Rhea Lynch.
What do you want? As if I didn't know.
Well, I wanted to talk to Gertie.
Yeah, with a load of feminist advice, I suppose.
No, I was going to invite her to lunch, as it happens.
Well, we can't go.
She might be able to go.
She's not able to go, Mrs. Burn Your Bra.
Perhaps she and I could talk about that, Jack.
Perhaps you'd like to go and take a...
There was the sound of a scuffle.
Rhea, it's Gertie. Sorry, I can't go.
You can't go to what?
To whatever it is you're asking me to, thanks, but I can't. It was only lunch, Gertie. Just a bloody leg of lamb. There was a sob at the other end. Then...
If that's all it bloody was, Rhea, why on earth did you ring me and cause all this trouble?
This is Martin and Hillary's answering machine. Please leave a message after the bleep.
It's nothing, Hillary. It's only Rhea. If you're not there on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock in the morning, then it's not likely you'll be there at lunchtime. Hey-ho! No message.
Rhea rang Colin Barry at the restaurant. He was often there on a Sunday. He told her he took advantage of the peace and quiet to do his accounts and paperwork.
Hello.
Colm's sister Caroline always spoke so softly you had to strain to hear what she said. She said that Colm wasn't there. He'd gone out to do something. Well, he wasn't there. Caroline sounded so unsure that Rhea began to wonder whether Colm was actually standing beside her, mouthing that he wouldn't take the call.
It doesn't matter. I was just going to ask him if he'd like to come to lunch, that's all.
Lunch? Today? Caroline managed to make both words contain an amazing amount of incredulity.
Well, yes.
With your family?
Here, yes.
And
Had you asked him? Did he forget?
No. It was a spur-of-the-moment thing. You too, of course, if you were free.
Caroline seemed totally incapable of taking in such a concept.
Lunch?
Today? She said the words again, and Rhea wanted to smack her very hard.
Forget it, Caroline. It was just a passing idea.
I'm sure Colm will be very sorry to have missed the invitation. He loves going to your house. It's just that he's out.
Yes, I know. Doing something, you said?
Rhea felt her voice had sounded unduly impatient.
And you're not free, Caroline, yourself. You and Monto?
She hoped fervently that they weren't free, and she was in luck. No, I'm very sorry. Truly I am, Rhea. I can't tell you how sorry I am. But it's just not possible today. Any other day would have been fine.
Oh, that's fine, Caroline. It was short notice, as I said. Rhea hung up.
The phone rang, and Rhea answered it hopefully.
Rhea, Barney McCarthy.
Oh, he's already gone to meet you there, Barney.
He has?
Yes, up at the new development, the posh flats.
Oh, of course, yes.
Are you not there?
No, I was delayed. If he calls back, tell him that. I'll catch him up along the way.
Sure.
And you're fine, Rhea?
Fine, she lied. Would she cook the lamb anyway and have it cold with salad when they all came home?
Gertie said you could refreeze things if they hadn't thawed completely. But what did Gertie know?
Colm would know, but he was out somewhere doing something according to that dithering sister of his. Rosemary would know, but Rhea hated having to ask her. Was she, in fact, becoming very boring, as Annie had said? Was she as thoughtless as her mother had suggested? Rhea knew now why people who lived on their own found Sunday a long, lonely day. It'd be different when they had a new baby. Then there wouldn't be enough hours in the day. Brian had been sick at the christening. He said it was bad enough to let him off school. He was pretty sure that Miles and Deco would have kinder, more understanding families who wouldn't force invalids to go out when they were feeling rotten. Annie said it was just a punishment, since they'd all been drinking champagne and obviously they were sick. Brian, red-faced with annoyance, said that she'd no proof of this at all, that she was only trying to make trouble to take attention away from the fact that she and Kitty had been out so late and caused such alarm.
I was talking about my career, about the future, jobs and things. Something a drunk like you will never have, Annie said coldly to Brian.
Rhea tried to keep the peace, looking in vain for any support from Danny, who had his head stuck in brochures and press releases about the new apartment blocks. He'd been tired when he came back last night. Too tired to respond when she'd reached out for him. It had been a long day, he said. For Rhea too, it had been a long day, pushing a heavy sanding machine around the floor, but she hadn't complained. Now they were back in familiar territory, a big noisy breakfast, a real family starting the week together in the big bright kitchen. And everything had simmered down by the time they were ready to leave. Brian said he thought he could face school, possibly the fresh air would do him good, and there was no proof that a court of law would accept that any alcohol had been taken. Annie said that possibly, yes, she should have telephoned to say it was all going on longer, but she hadn't thought that anyone would be waiting, honestly. Danny dragged himself out of the world of executive apartments.
You couldn't give away anything with wall-to-wall carpet nowadays, he said. Everything has to have sprung oak floors, they won't consider it. Where did all the money come from in this society? Tell me that, and I'll die happy.
Oh, not for decades yet. I have great plans for you first, Rhea laughed.
Yes, well, none for tonight, I hope, he said. There's a dinner, investors, I have to be there.
Oh, not again.
Oh, yes, again. And many times again before we're through with this. If the estate agents don't go to the promotions, then what confidence will they think we have in it all?
She made a face. I know, I know. And after all, it won't be for long.
What do you mean?
Well, eventually they'll all be sold, won't they? Isn't that what it's about?
This phase, but this is only phase one. Remember, we were talking about it on Saturday with Barney.
Oh, did Barney get you yesterday?
No, why?
He got delayed. I told him he'd find you at the development.
I was with people all day. I expect someone took a message. I'll get it when I get into the office and ring him then.
You work too hard, Danny.
So do you.
His smile was sympathetic.
Look, I brought home that sander, and you had to do most of it, as it turned out.
Still, if you think it looks nice. Rhea was doubtful.
Sweetheart, no question. It adds thousands to the resale value already, and that's only in one weekend. Wait till we get those children of ours working properly. Nice bit of slave labour. And do the upstairs as well. This place will be worth a fortune.
But we don't want to sell it, Rhea said, alarmed.
I know, but one day, when we're old and grey and we want a nice apartment by the sea or on the planet Mars or something.
He ruffled her hair and left. Rhea smiled to herself. Things were normal again.
Rhea!
Hello, ma'am. Where's Pliers?
Oh, I see. You have no interest in seeing your own mother anymore, only the dog.
No, I just thought he'd be with you, that's all.
Well, he's not. Your friend Gertie's taken him for a walk. That's where he is, gone for a nice morning run down by the canal.
Gertie?
Yes. She said that she heard dogs like Pliers needed a run now and then to shake them up. And of course, though I have been able to keep myself reasonably trim, I'm not really able to do anything like that for Pliers anymore, so Gertie offered.
Rhea was astounded.
Gertie didn't run, she barely walked these days, living in such dread of her drunken husband.
Rhea's mother had lost interest in the conversation.
Anyway, I only came in because I was passing to tell Annie that it's 7 o'clock tonight.
What is?
They're coming down to St. Rita's with me this evening. Annie and her friend Kitty. We're teaching Kitty bridge.
Rhea's mind was churning. But that'll be during supper.
I suppose they manage to think that some things are more important because they're nice and normal and they actually like people, said Rhea's mother.
She sat at her daughter's table waiting for coffee to be served to her, her face thunderous with the heavy implication that Rhea was neither nice nor normal and positively hated meeting people. The washing machine had just begun to swirl and hum when Rosemary rang.
Oh, Lord, Rhea, how I envy you. Relaxed in your own home while I'm stuck at work.
That's the way things are.
Rhea knew there was an edge to her voice. She was becoming sharp with people for no reason. She rushed on to take the harm out of her words.
Oh, we all think the grass is greener on the other place. Often when I'm picking up things from the floor here, I envy you being at work and out of the house all day.
No, of course you don't.
Why do you say that?
Because, as I keep telling you, if you did feel like that, cabin fever and everything, then you'd get a job. Listen, what I rang to say is, I saw Jack being taken off by a Garda car this morning. Some disturbance outside a pub. I thought you'd want to know. If you've nothing better to do, you might check whether Gertie's in bits or anything.
But Gertie's not in bits. She's out walking my mother's dog.
Oh, not serious. Aren't people amazing? Rosemary sounded pleased at this surprise news. She didn't ask for a dog walking fee, did she?
No, I don't think so. My mother would have said.
Oh, well, that's all right then. It's not as if she's doing it to get a couple of quid to buy him more drink when the fuzz lets him go.
Mrs. Lynch?
Yes, that's right. All day odd things had been happening.
Mrs. Danny Lynch?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I think I may have the wrong number.
No, that's who I am, Rhea Lynch. The phone went dead. Her sister Hilary rang just then.
You sounded like the mother of sorrows on the answering machine, she said.
Oh, no, I didn't. I just spoke and said it didn't matter. We both say that people who don't leave messages should be hanged.
I keep saying that the answering machine was a sheer waste of money. Whoever calls, what messages are there that you'd want to hear?
Thanks, Hilary. Hilary was unaware of any sarcasm.
What was it you wanted to talk about anyway? Ma'am, I suppose.
No, not at all.
She really is going loopy, you know, Rhea. You don't see that because you don't want to. You always want to believe that everything's fine in the world, that there's no famine, no war, politicians are all honest and mean well, and the climate's great.
Hilary, did you ring up just to attack me in general, or is there anything specific?
Ha ha ha, very funny. But going back to ma'am, I worry about her.
But why? We've been over this a dozen times. She's fit and healthy, she's busy and happy. Well, she should feel needed by her own family. Hilary, she is needed by her family. Isn't she in here every single day of her life, sometimes twice a day? I ask her to stay to meals. I ask her to stay the night. She's out with Annie and Brian more than I am.
Oh, I suppose you're saying now that I don't do enough.
I'm not saying anything of the sort. And she's never done talking about you and Martin and how good you are to her.
Well, that's as maybe.
So what is it really that's worrying you? She's trying to sell her house. There was a silence.
Of course she's not Hilary. She'd have talked to Danny about it.
Only if she was selling it through him.
Well, who else would she go to?
No, Hilary, you've got this all wrong.
We'll see, said Hilary and hung up. Sweetheart?
Yes, Danny?
Was anyone looking for me at home? Any peculiar sort of person?
No, nobody at all. Why?
Oh, there's some crazy ringing up about the apartments. She says she's been refused as a client. Total paranoia. She's ringing everyone at home as well.
Oh, a woman did ring, but she didn't leave any message. That might have been her.
What did she say?
Nothing. Just kept checking who I was.
And who did you say you were?
Suddenly Rhea snapped. It had been a stressful weekend, filled with silly unrelated things that just didn't make sense.
I told her that I was an axe murderer passing through. God, Danny, who do you think I told her I was? She asked, was I Mrs. Lynch, and I said I was. Then she said she had the wrong number and hung up.
I'm telling the guards about it. It's nuisance calls.
And did you say that in the office? You know who she is?
Listen, honey, I'll be late tonight. You know, I told you.
Dinner. Yes, I know.
I have to run, sweetheart.
He called everyone sweetheart. There was nothing particularly special about it. It was ludicrous, but she'd have to make an appointment with her husband to discuss having a baby, and a further appointment to do something about it if he agreed that it was a good idea.